The following is an excerpt from the Science Magazine podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
David Graham, online news editor of Science Magazine, is here with a wrap-up of some of the latest science news, including a story about how friendly baboons live longer. Dave, does this kind of research have any implications for human friendships and longevity?
Well, Rob, actually, we already know that humans live longer when they form strong social bonds. Studies have shown that humans that tend to have more friends and stronger relationships with those friends tend to live longer. So we already know this happens in humans. The question with this study is, does it happen in other animals? And the reason we want to know that is because if humans and other animals, especially close relatives like baboons, have behaviors in common, it suggests that these behaviors have a strong evolutionary component.
So that it evolved in multiple species, or our ancestors in common with baboons and other mammals?
Exactly. The idea is that something like this, like friendship, may have evolved a long time ago, even before humans came on the scene. It may have been something that was present in a common ancestor between us and other primates. And why that's important is if something's been around for that long, and we're talking millions of years, then it must be important in some way. Researchers have speculated that friendship may do everything from help us reduce stress to actually helping our wounds heal faster. So you could see that if friendship is important beyond humans, that it really means that it's been a very important behavior, not only to our species, but to other species for a long, long time.
So what did this research focus on?
Well, they're looking at baboons here, and they're specifically looking at 44 female baboons. Now, researchers have tried to look at friendship in other animals before, but the problem with studying animals, and especially studying something like friendship, I mean, this is not something that you can say, you know, hey, does that monkey like bananas, or does that monkey like, you know, nuts? It's not something that you can just observe for a couple hours and see the difference. Something like friendship, you really have to observe for a very long time. And in fact, in this study, they followed the baboons from 2001 to 2007. So they were looking at them for a really long time. This is something that hasn't been done with other animals before. And they looked at 44 female baboons, and over the years, they cataloged which females tended to hang out more with other females, how long they tended to hang out with other females. And the whole idea was to try to get a sense of who everyone's friends were and how strong the relationship was between those friends.
Why only females?
Well, it turns out among baboons, females are the only gender that tends to form strong social bonds. The males tend to be off doing other things and tend to be more competitive with each other than cooperative. So if you want to study friendship, it's really best, at least in this species, to look at the females.
And what did this friendship or these strong cooperative bonds consist of exactly?
Well, the researchers were looking at things like how frequently one female would approach another female, how long they groomed each other, and other things like that.
And the effect of this kind of friendship?
Well, the researchers found that just like in humans, the female baboons that form the strongest social bonds were also the ones that live the longest. The ones that formed weak social bonds tended to live anywhere from about 7 to 18 years. Those that formed strong social bonds lived anywhere from 10 years and up. And they say and up because they were still, a lot of these baboons were still alive by the time the study ended. So they really don't know what the upper limit is for a lot of these very social baboons.
And these baboons were in the wild, but protected so that they're not being hunted or what?
Right. When these baboons are dying, they're typically dying of natural causes because they're on a game reserve, which means they're being protected.
So the lower limit was 7 years for those who didn't have these strong social bonds and 10 years for those who did have these strong social bonds. That's quite an increase.
It is quite an increase. And baboons can live more than 25 years. So again, this most social group, we don't know how long they're going to live. But what the researchers are assuming based on these numbers is that they're already living longer than their less social group members. And the researchers are saying based on these numbers that overall it's going to be a really significant amount longer that these most social female baboons are living.
And were these baboons the ones that are living the longest? Are they the ones with the oldest friendships?
Exactly. It was the ones with the strongest, the most stable, and the longest lasting relationships that lived longer than the other baboons.
Okay. Well, thanks, Dave. So what other stories have you brought with you this week?
Well, Rob, from baboons to a much larger animal, the woolly mammoth. This next story is about whether the extinction of woolly mammoths led to a warming of the earth.
How would that happen?
Well, it turns out mammoths are a lot like elephants. They are pretty harsh on vegetation. They strip leaves. They eat a lot of grass. They tend to practically deforest a lot of their regions that they spend a lot of time in. And researchers know that a lot of vegetation is really important for the temperature of an area, especially some leaves, especially if they're darker leaves. Darker leaves absorb more heat. So the more leaves you have, the hotter things get. And so you would imagine that if a bunch of mammoths were in an area and they were stripping all these dark leaves away, and then all of a sudden the mammoths disappeared and all these leaves came back again, all of a sudden the temperature is going to go up.
And what's the evidence that this actually happened?
Well, researchers focus on an area that's called Beringia, which is this land bridge between Siberia and Alaska. Now, we don't see that land bridge anymore because it's underwater, but it used to be above water. And this is where a lot of mammoths spent their time tens of thousands of years ago. But about 15,000 years ago, their population plummeted. They all started to die off. And it was also around this time that researchers noticed a temperature increase. But they didn't know if they were related at all. And in fact, there's been a lot of theories about why the mammoths died in the first place. Did human hunters hunt them to extinction? Was there climate change before the mammoths started dying off, and that's what caused the mammoths to start dying off because they couldn't deal with the heat? This study doesn't really answer that question, but it tackles the question of what impact did the mammoth die-off have on the environment? So almost the flip side of that question. And so what researchers did was they looked at fossil records in Beringia. They looked at a lot of the fossil pollen records to see what was going on with the plants at the time.
Getting sediments off the seafloor.
Exactly. And they looked at mammoth fossil records to figure out when mammoth populations started to decline. They even looked at elephant feeding habits to try to get a good sense of how many trees these mammoths were eating. And one of the big trees in this area was a genus of birch tree called the betula. And this is a tree with dark leaves. And as we said earlier, those leaves are really absorbing a lot of sunlight. And what the researchers found was when they combined all this data together, plugged it into some climate models, they found that the die-off of these mammoths caused an explosion in these trees. These trees, these betula trees, became much more abundant than they were before. And when that happened, the researchers also saw about a 0.2 degrees Celsius increase in the temperature of this area and a 0.1 degrees Celsius increase in the average warming of the entire world. And they all trace it back to the die-off of these mammoths.
Climate modeling is pretty complicated, though, right? So what are other researchers saying about this?
Well, other researchers are saying this is a very controversial question. And one outside expert for this story says that there's evidence that actually the birch trees started coming back a long time before the mammoths actually went extinct. But what she says is interesting about this paper is that it really looks, again, at the opposite side of this equation, not what caused the extinction of the mammoths, but what did the extinction of the mammoths cause? And this is a question that researchers really haven't spent a lot of time looking at until now.
Okay. So last story, what's this last one about?
Well, Rob, from looking under the Bering Sea to looking under the surface of the moon, this last story is about what exactly is in the moon's interior.
How would you go about measuring something like that?
Well, as you can imagine, we can't just send a drilling rig over to the moon and start drilling below the surface and figuring that out. The closest we've really come is that Apollo astronauts have brought back a lot of rocks from the moon, and that tells us what's on the surface of the moon and tells us a lot about the mineral content of the surface, but it doesn't tell us anything about what minerals are under the surface or in the mantle of the moon, which is below the lunar crust.
Why are researchers interested in finding out what's under the surface of the moon?
Well, Rob, there's a hypothesis that a huge celestial object slammed into Earth about 4.5 billion years ago, and it dislodged so much material from our planet that that material actually coalesced and became our moon. It's a hard theory to prove, though. One way to support that would be to show that the composition of the moon is similar to the composition of the Earth. And we know that the mantle of the Earth is heavy in a mineral called olivine. And so the question would be, if the moon's mantle is also heavy in olivine, that would be good confirmation that both of these bodies came from the same place.
So some other source of data then besides what the Apollo astronauts brought back.
Exactly. And so what researchers did in this study was a Japanese team that used data from the lunar orbiter called Kaguya. And this orbiter scanned the surface of the moon between 2007 and 2009 and looked for traces of olivine. And it actually scanned 70 million points on the moon, and it found a signature of olivine reflectance at about 245 of those points. So a very, very tiny fraction. But what was interesting about this fraction is when they mapped out where the orbiter had seen the olivine mapped very well to the edges of major craters on the moon's surface.
So caused by impacts into the moon's surface, which would bring out what's underneath the surface.
Exactly. That's what they're speculating. You know, if we can't get underneath the moon's surface ourselves, asteroids and comets do a pretty good job of that because they slam into the moon with such force that they're actually dislodging material from the moon's mantle. And theoretically, you would be able to see that in these really deep impact craters. And that's what the researchers say they're seeing here.
So we know maybe a little bit better about what is under the surface of the moon. Does that help solidify the hypothesis about how the moon formed?
Well, if the olivine really did come from the mantle, then it really does provide evidence for this theory that the moon came from an impact with Earth, because the moon's mantle would be very similar to Earth's mantle. But some scientists say we can't actually be sure that this olivine came from the mantle. It's possible it just came from the crust of the moon, and we don't really know exactly what's going on when these asteroids and comets are hitting the lunar surface, exactly where this material is that they're dredging up.
The idea being that the asteroids or comets themselves could have this olivine in them.
Well, that's possible. Or it's possible that these impacts weren't actually strong enough to dislodge material from the mantle, and therefore what researchers are seeing is just olivine that's come from the crust.
So it's still sort of an open question about this original hypothesis about whether some rather large object struck Earth and eventually coalesced into the moon.
Well, you know, this is a pretty well agreed upon hypothesis, but, you know, you always want evidence to support it. And this evidence has not been easy to come by. But now they're starting to get something that seems like it's making this hypothesis a much more solid story.
Okay. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Rob.
So what other stories are you looking into for the site?
Well, Rob, for Science Now, we've got a story about the incredibly shrinking proton. It turns out that protons may actually be smaller than researchers had thought. And also a story about how changing the housing of mice might shrink their tumors. And we've also got coverage from ESOF. This is the European Open Science Forum, sort of Europe's answer to the AAAS meeting that we hold every year. There's a lot of interesting science happening there that's being held in Turin, Italy. Stories about green motorcycles, and not green the color, but environmentally friendly, and also how Italian scientists are selling their research with fine Italian dining. And finally, on Science Insider, we continue our oil spill coverage. And we've also got a story about ClimateGate. This was this release of emails that took place between prominent climate scientists a while back, and there's been an investigation of exactly what happened and what it means for climate scientists in general. And we've got reporting on that investigation, and you can check out all of these stories on the site.
David Grimm is the online news editor of Science. You can check out the latest science news and the policy blog, Science Insider, at news.sciencemag.org.